Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?
All right, welcome on back to another edition of the Baltimore Beatdown podcast. It is Tuesday night, January 31st. My name is Jake Luke, and I'm joined on my screen by Spencer Nathaniel Schultz. How's it going, pal?
Going well. We just finished an awesome interview with Ken Rogers and Jason Weber of NFL Films, who have done countless 30 for 30s and really just have started to define a generation of incredible NFL content. And for as much flack as the NFL gets for, you know, changing rules or refs or whatever people find things to complain about, you know, I will always love the NFL, and I know you are the same way, but what they have done for preservation of the history of a storied league that has grown as the United States of America has grown and changed within that same frame, and those two things being in simpatico almost and mirroring each other in many ways, is incredible. And what Steve Sable created, rest in peace to him. And you know, I mentioned to Ken and Jason, but you know, my dad, my late father, was a huge football historian guy, loved anything old from the old days, loved anything that was a story about the Baltimore Colts or any sort of team. So it was a real trip getting to talk to those two guys who have so much passion, so much dedication, have been a part of so many stories and gotten to preserve the beauty of the aspects of the NFL that are no longer with us. And that's what this 30 for 30 was. It was a story of kind of the last of a dying breed in many ways. And we get into that with them, but it was sweet. One of my favorite interviews that we've ever done. You just said off air, we're going to party till the lights go off here. So it was one of our, you know, I think favorite and best and most entertaining listens, and something that I think Ravens fans need right now. I think Ravens fans deserve, and the good folks of Baltimore and the surrounding areas and wherever you are worldwide listening to this or watching that 30 for 30. It's a story that I think gives you a little bit more background on the DNA of the Baltimore Ravens, especially for the younger fan or someone basically younger than me, or I guess right around your age or younger than you. You were 5 when the Ravens won the Super Bowl. I was 7. I remember that night. I remember my brother was a huge Ravens fan. And as soon as the final bell rang, he kind of just got buck naked and ran down the street in his Timberland boots screaming, "We did it. We won the Super Bowl." And someone called the cops because they thought that it was a crazy person and I guess weren't sure what was going on, but banging pots and pans and all that stuff. So would love to hear on Twitter or wherever where you guys watched from, or you know, what you remember from that game or what that game means to you or anything of the sort. But that was awesome, and I'm glad we got to do that one.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. One of the more fun chats, and we say this a lot, but it's certainly true in this case. It's true in the context of you know, what's been going on the last couple of days here that we've been talking about. But yeah, it was an absolutely awesome trip down memory lane to get sent this screener to watch the 30 for 30 ahead of time. I did it last Friday night, poured myself a little tequila and just sat down and really It's tough to say reminisced. Like you said, I'm five. I don't remember a lot of this stuff, but I do remember Goose. I do remember some of these figures, and I remember some of these early 2000s teams. So, yeah, it was really nice to go back and watch this again. You know, the 2000 Ravens Football Life documentary, or not Football Life, America's Game documentary. One of my favorite sports documentaries I've ever seen, and this is kind of like a sequel to it in a little bit. It's just a more fleshed out version. And Ken and Jason were awesome. I mean, they were great to chat with. We had been talking about getting them on for a couple of weeks. We were finally able to make it happen here ahead of the release, which is Sunday night. So, yeah, it was just really, really awesome. And this team was really unique for a lot of different reasons, for their off-field personas, for how unique they were on the field as far as just winning defensively. You don't, even at the time, you didn't get a lot of teams that won the Super Bowl like solely defensively, which is something that's forgotten a little bit. But they were sort of one of the last of the old guard in that way. This is something that we touch on in the interview, which you guys are going to hear, and something they touch on in the documentary. So, yeah, it was just you know, we're sitting here gushing a little bit. It was such a great chat. But yeah, I mean, another thing that we need to talk about, a little elephant in the room here. You know, the future of the podcast is a little up in the air right now. One thing I will say for anyone listening and anyone who's not on social media or anything like that, it sounds like that Vox Media is just kind of cutting podcasts across the board. So it sounds like we're probably not going to be on this specific RSS feed anymore. Something like that. So we're not going to be maybe under this name any longer. But one thing I do want to say to you guys that are concerned is that Spencer and I will be creating content together for a very long time. It's going to continue. I don't know exactly what capacity it's going to continue. Discussions are being had. We're thinking about it a lot. And we're going to come to a resolution on that soon. But yeah, we're in a little bit of a weird spot right now.
Definitely. And we're going to close out our contracts run through February with SB Nation, with Vox doing the podcast. So they are terminating all SB Nation podcasts, which is definitely strange. But hey, when the market downturn happens, the first thing to go is usually advertising, marketing, things of that nature. So if their dollars are getting cut down, they're not making the revenue from it. I get it. I'm not upset with them. Shit happens. Party naked, as an eloquent man once said. But we will continue. We're going to close this month out. It has been a fantastic four-year run and seeing a new era of this Ravens team and what it has been over the last couple of years, the relationships we've made, the listeners we've gotten to interact with, you and I, you know, growing together and figuring this thing out. The first time we recorded an episode, I was on my cell phone with headphone-wired iPhone headphones in the middle of Ohio in a Penske truck driving across country. So from where we started to interviewing guys like Ed Reed multiple times to having NFL films, ESPN directors and producers on here, you having David Simon on here, the Forgotten Dynasty, all the memories that we've had, the playoff games, the wins, the losses, the free agent signings, the trades, the disappointment, the big wins, all of those things, you know, Lamar Jackson winning the first unanimous MVP in NFL history. It's been a really fun time as a Ravens fan. That's why I think it's exciting to maybe close this chapter and start another one, as we, I think, have grown much more professional in many ways than maybe we started as a little bit more bright-eyed and bushy-tailed 4 years ago. But at the same time, I think that this exact interview that we have and the fact that The Bullies of Baltimore, a 30 for 30, comes out on the Baltimore Ravens, and the first one that we get that really is the essence of the Ravens at all. You mentioned America's Game and all that, and that was a great one. But this one feels special, and it feels like a little bit of a segue or a little bit of something in the cosmos of a new era of Ravens football, the Ravens themselves, a little bit of a impasse with Lamar Jackson, with the direction of the franchise, the direction of the team. So we're excited to close one chapter as, you know, the SB Nation subsidiary of Baltimore Beatdown podcast. And we're going to try and get together and carve out what is going to be the most efficient and, I guess, ramping up method, because this to me is something that I want to do full time and expand on throughout the next few years. And I'm going to be making more content, not less. I have been for some time. At this point, you and I both have hundreds of bylines to our name, thousands of hours of, you know, hashing out interviews, talking through different aspects of the NFL and things of that nature. So I'm in it for the long run. We're in it for the long run, and we're excited for what's next. So it's been a good run under, I guess, this name or maybe this entity, and what we have in this feed. And we're not sure, you know, what will stay, what will go, all of that good stuff. But again, we're going to be doing the damn thing for the foreseeable future regardless. So super excited for what's next. And it's been a pleasure and an honor to meet and interact and talk with and chat with and DM and do all the things that we've done with you listeners over the last couple of years. I've made a lot of good friendships, a lot of solace I can bring in. I don't know, something that just started out as a little bullshit, you know, me being bored a few years ago and not really wanting to knowing what I wanted to do with my career, and now to have a sense of direction in something that's a passion of mine and that brings me a lot of joy and I spend a lot of time on. It's been really nice. And I would just say that everyone should find something they enjoy to take up their time. And, you know, if you're religious, non-religious, whatever it may be, we're all just little, you know, specks on a big planet and a big dusty rock floating around. So do shit that you like. This is the shit that I like, and I've been doing it for almost half a decade now, and I would say that it's definitely been a paramount thing in my life and my happiness. So highly recommend, and all the joy that we've had here has been awesome.
Yeah, it's beautifully said. I echo all of that. I've been with the site for, I think, 7 years now. I think I started in 2016, in April, maybe somewhere around there of that year, back when I was in college and didn't really know what I, you know, wanted to do with it. I knew I didn't want to be a journalist because I tried one journalism class and I really disliked it. So there was that. But I knew I wanted to do something. And, you know, there were sites around that time that kind of felt like they were skirting the lines of, you know, maybe keeping it professional, but also having a little bit of fun as far as covering sports, covering whatever they wanted to cover. And that was just always something that was very nebulous to me. But it's like, I remember sitting there and thinking, like, man, I want to be that guy. Like, I want to be Bill Simmons. I want to be the Pardon My Take guys. I want to be all that. And like, I don't really talk a ton about my aspirations or anything like that, because I think I'm, you know, there's a little bit of fear there of like, what if I never achieve it? But like, at a certain point, you got to push your chips and say, fuck it, I'm gonna do it. And, you know, maybe I will one day, maybe I won't, but we absolutely gave it our all in our time with this website, in our time with this podcast. And I think, to a point that you made there, this isn't the end of that at all. In fact, I think this is the beginning of something much, much bigger, based upon some of the chats that you and I have had in the last couple of days. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. So that's going to be great. But like you said, here through February, doing what we got to do, talking about this team, and damn, maybe something will happen with Lamar Jackson before we leave. But until then, it's been an absolute pleasure with this site. Kyle, I got to give a shout out. You brought me onto the site. Great guy, rooting for your success, you know, moving forward as a writer for the Ravens and all the great things you're doing. Voss, you were my first co-host. I got to shout you out. Good friend of mine, and you always will be. And all the great writers that we have at our site, Frank, Dustin, Josh Reed, who's no longer with us, but he was great as well over that time period. But just a lot of great people we've had the opportunity to work with on the site.
We got to bring on Zeege.
Zeege Batman, my guy. I got to shout him out as well, in my coaching tree, I guess, so to speak. So that was great. And he's going to continue to do great stuff as well. So yeah, it's been great on the site, off the site. We've made friends with people like Cole, with people like Bobby Trossett, with people like the two Barstool guys. It's just, it's been an amazing 4 years. And the fact that this feels more like a jumping off point than the end of something, I think, is a testament to how good of a job that we did to pat ourselves on the back, to fillet ourselves a little bit. But yeah, it was an awesome run, and it's going to continue, but just maybe not in the same way.
Definitely very excited, hoping to be able to reach out into entities of sponsorship and revenue, ad revenue, all of those things as well. So we'll figure that out. We'll keep you guys updated, but we will remain here for the next month. So don't have any bitter feelings at all. It's just kind of sweet, no bitter, and excited for what's next. So with that, again, I think that the opportunity to interview Jason and Ken was really timely in considering what's going on. And again, I just can't overstate that it feels like what the Ravens are and what the Ravens clearly mean to you as a listener. If you're someone that listens, that's why, then it's a good place to revisit that team, the spirit of them, the history, the tradition, and really the first of any of those things that the Ravens had after the long break from the Baltimore Colts to what we know as the Ravens today. So I'm floored with the documentary itself. It was outstanding. The passing of Tony Siragusa, being like a month after, and understanding what guys like Rod Woodson and Tony Siragusa and Coach Brian Billick, who truly, I mean, if people think that like a Mike McDaniel is ridiculous, or a Bill Belichick in another way is ridiculous, or, you know, Kyle Shanahan, I don't know if we'll all be alive on Sunday or whatever the hell. You think those things are ridiculous? I mean, Brian Billick is, you know, making fun of cops that almost die, cracking jokes, you know, telling the media basically that they are incompetent and they don't know how to do their own jobs and that they're a bunch of clickbait monsters back in 2000.
Before clickbait was even a thing.
Right. He basically calls them all jackals. And, you know, going into Tennessee, he and an interesting aspect, I guess, to spoil a little bit of the interview, but like Billick was providing nonstop bulletin board material for every opponent. The Ravens did nothing but run their mouths. Like, it made me, in today's game, like, it made me appreciate, like, the Richard Shermans and Eli Apples and Trent Williams, I guess, who's always trying to throw down. Aaron Donald is pretty feisty. Like, it made me appreciate them so much more. The reason I fell in love with football was because it's violent and because it is a testament of will, and the strategy involved in such a violent thing is a beautiful symmetry of beauty and violence. And, you know, I know that, and if the NFL doesn't love those things anymore and they've shifted away to it, but for me, that's what made me fall in love with the game and playing it when I was younger and all of those things. So to see this team that almost feels like, you know, the libraries of Alexandria, like, we'll never see this again. It won't occur again. It is something that is in the past. Football in the form that the 2000 Ravens played and won at the highest level at will not exist again. So to go back to those roots and what endeared this team to this city and this fan base was really special. We don't get shit like this in Baltimore. We're not a major market. We don't have, you know, we've got the Orioles who have sucked my entire life, save for my super youth, our super, you know, our infant and toddler years, pretty much.
Let's give Buck some credit too. Come on.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, they're probably the worst team in baseball over the course of our life.
Winningest team in baseball for like 5 years there. So
it was. It definitely was. They were averaging, you know, well over 90 wins a season. Sure. But we got two teams. We don't really get a lot of cool national documentary pieces or much acclaim overall. And to have this is something that was really near and dear to me. And that's kind of the point where I really started to love football, was those 2000 Ravens. I was playing for the Hampstead Ravens out there in Old Carroll County. I was trying to play some linebacker. I was trying to be like Ray Lewis. So to get to revisit that was a huge part of my childhood. And it was really cool seeing Ray Lewis and Tony Siragusa and Rod Woodson and Jamal Lewis and Trent Dilfer and all those guys, Shannon Sharp, kind of revert back to their previous time when they were in their 20s and maybe young 30s. And revert back a little bit. So it's definitely a throwback in that sense, full of nostalgia and to a time that, you know, you did Forgotten Dynasty. This is kind of the Forgotten Gladiators. So I love it. The Bullies of Baltimore, it was a fucking 10 out of 10 for me. And our interview was super fun. So excited to get to that too.
No, it certainly was. And you mentioned Forgotten Dynasty. This almost feels kind of like a sequel to that a little bit to me. Not to put myself in the same class necessarily, but just the idea of, you know, this team had a football, or this city had a football identity with their team that was, you know, they had reason to puff their chest out very much for 30 years or so. And then it just went away out of nowhere. And then it came back in a big way out of nowhere. And you see that happen in the documentary. It's awesome. You mentioned that it just could not happen again. That is absolutely the case. It couldn't happen again. But that's all the more reason to appreciate it. Go back and watch some of the Billick sound bites, which, you know, we hit on a little bit, and then you'll see on Sunday night. It's just really, really awesome stuff. So you guys are going to love it. So without further belaboring it, we'll throw it over to the interview with Ken Rogers and Jason Weber. We're maybe going to be back at some point this week to record maybe a Thursday night situation, news dependent, maybe just do a little mailbag or something like that, and keep cranking this content out, partying until the lights go out, as we put it. And yeah, I guess until we talk to you, we talk to you. But in the meantime, here's Ken Rogers and Jason Weber of NFL Films.
See you.
Arrivederci. All right. We now welcome on a couple different special guests. It's Ken Rogers, Jason Weber, two guys working with NFL Films and ESPN to produce the 30 for 30 documentary, The Bullies of Baltimore. How is it going tonight, gentlemen?
It's going great.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess kicking right off the bat here, this is a team This has been covered in a few different documentaries that have been well received. We're both big fans of the America's Game documentary on this team that NFL Films did as well. So let's just start right there. Where'd the idea come from to go back and revisit the 2000 Ravens?
You know, there's a time for every film, and enough time passes and the generations move on, and there's some people that don't remember this team. You know, it's hard to remember 21 years ago for a lot of people, certainly under 35. And while our films, I think, have great staying power, we're in this phase where 20, 25 years ago, there's great nostalgia. And that led us to this era and this team, because the team is so entertaining that we said, you can do this again and do it better and do it bigger. And there's so much more to say because of the comparison of that 2000 Baltimore Ravens and how the NFL is played today. You know, this team couldn't exist today in many ways, off the field, on the field, it just wouldn't fly. And so that really stoked us to start talking about what would happen if we made a film about these guys and reminded people what they were like.
Definitely. And just going through some of your history, you guys have worked on, you know, Elway to Marino, the Four Falls of Buffalo, the Two Bills, Neon's double play, Al Davis versus the NFL, all of these. And the thing that stood out to me, I'm obviously such a fan of 30 for 30. It's the best series. Congratulations, gentlemen, on another one. We got the opportunity. Thank you so much for letting us in advance. But congrats. It was a grand slam. I was obviously a Ravens fan, but I'm giddy like a little boy while I'm watching this. It was so well done. And the interesting thing that immediately stood out to me here is the kind of platform and the event that the Ravens had to commemorate this. And then on top of that, having Rod Woodson, Ray Lewis, Tony Siragusa, Trent Ripper, all of these guys that were professional speakers, professional TV, you know, hosts, analysts, all of these things. Was that different? Did that present a different dynamic in having guys that shined in the camera, thrived in the camera? I mean, Shannon Sharp is on the most ridiculous sports coverage show, if you want to call it that, that exists. So was that a little bit different for you guys? Was that fun? What was the experience like working with, I guess, if you want to call them professionals, I suppose?
I think that's the reason why that was the perfect venue for that, right? These are guys who are just performers. They did it when they played in the game, and they do it now. I'm trying to think of a team that has had more players on the national spotlight since they've retired. Like you said, they're not doing it locally. They're doing it in the most, you know, in a national forum, whether it's Fox, ESPN. I mean, they are out there, Showtime, Paramount Plus. I can't think of another group that has more faces on national television than that 2000 Baltimore Ravens. So like for us, it was like, this is the perfect way to get these guys together. And look, they're great talkers. Put them all together on the same stage, and you're going to get something out of them that you're not going to get from any other group.
Did you guys plan to frame it around that? So, like, I guess I'm wondering, like, was there collaboration with the organization? Like, hey, we're doing this tonight. You guys are doing this 30 for 30. Come by. Or, like, what was that whole process like?
That was the plan. I mean, I think Ken had reached out to them with this idea, and they had talked, if I'm not mistaken, Ken, they had talked about doing, they did a Zoom reunion for the 20th anniversary, but that was in the middle of COVID, so they couldn't really get everybody together, and they were looking for an opportunity to get these guys together, and Ken came up with the idea of, you know, doing this on stage, and the Ravens were like, this would be amazing. They hopped right on it and were amazing partners in putting the project and the event together. So it was a lot of work, kind of a collaboration between us and the Ravens in making that event and then using that as the framework for the documentary.
And part of that mindset was, these guys are so incredible individually on the air and in the interviews, the single interviews that we did. But when you get them together, they're even better. I mean, they revert to the personalities they had in 2000. All of a sudden, Tony Siragusa is the ringleader, stirring up stories, and Shannon's talking, and Ray is the leader, and everybody sort of goes into their mode that they were together. So it'd be one thing to study everyone separately, but to have them on stage and the way Jason laid it out and directed the live show, it forced them into – their team again, forced them to become a team again, and you saw the relationships between them rather than just who they were as individuals.
Did anyone, even the coaching staff too, like Marvin Lewis and Jack Del Rio are giddy and they feel like they're in their, you know, early 40s again, it felt like.
Yeah, no, the thing what was really cool to me, and you see it in the documentary, is that like as soon as they get together, like it just clicks, right? And they just feel like they're back together in the locker room. It's like, you know, they have all that camaraderie that they've built up from that era of playing together, and you know, they've all gone their separate ways, and probably some of the guys hadn't seen each other in a while, but it just felt like as soon as they saw each other, they were in a great mood, and they were just, you know, just so happy to tell these stories about, you know, what it was obviously a great time in their lives.
Yeah. So for anyone listening that's going to go ahead and watch this, it's coming out on Sunday night, the 5th, I believe. So yeah, I don't want to give it away too much or anything. I think people have already seen the promos, but you guys obviously do this series of like talking head interviews with the guys behind the stage where you get them off individually. Did anyone kind of surprise you in those? Was there anyone where you walked away like, wow, that guy is maybe a little bit more charismatic or more informative, more entertaining than I thought?
You know, I'm not sure I was surprised, but I was reminded of how great Coach Billick is. I mean, you talk about someone who's been on camera. You know, he started as a PR person for the 49ers before he became a coach, great offensive coordinator, and then head of this team. And the whole attitude of this team comes from him. And so you could see it in the interview, and you can certainly see it on stage, and the amount of trash talking archives we had of a head coach. You have to remember that in 2001, right after this team wins a Super Bowl, the Belichick era starts of coming out as a team, not saying anything in press conferences, not providing any bulletin board material whatsoever. And that's been hugely successful, and the NFL is a copycat league, so everyone does that now. But in 2000, this was the formula to win. The Ravens had a formula, and it included saying what you felt as long as you could back it up. And Coach Billick has no qualms about saying how he feels, saying how strong he felt the team was, and pitting his guys against the rest of the world. And you can see it in some of the things that happen on stage as well. And some of the archives that we found of Coach just trash talking straight up. I can't describe it another way other than he was a trash talker. That informed the ability of this team to do the same thing. They felt emboldened to be themselves. And if you don't have Shannon Sharp and Tony Siragusa and Rod Woodson and all those guys being themselves, then they're not going to be at their best. So he really was a key to me that I was reminded of.
Definitely. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and I think a point that proved that point in the documentary is in that game and against Tennessee where they play Brian Billick on the scoreboard saying, you know, going at the Titans, and the team immediately says, that's right. We got your back. And they go out there and they perform. You know, they weren't ones to shy away with something like that. If they were called out for their talking, that didn't make them kind of go into a shell. They loved it. They performed better, I think, in those situations.
And that definitely brings up so many interesting points. And that was kind of a moment for me when the Titans bring up in the narrative here, Billick has the sideline interview and he's kind of flustered and his words he's tripping on. And it felt like that was the moment where he was like, oh my God, what have I created? Like that was the Frankenstein moment. And then the players are like, as soon as we saw it, they just turned into the gladiator. And the gladiator narrative of Ray Lewis and the man in the arena and following up on everything. How seamless or where were you guys like delighted to kind of have that as a segue from Ray Lewis's murder trial and acquittal and everything of that sort into what this team's kind of foundation was?
Yeah, I mean, the best bite in that Titans game is Shannon Sharp saying, whatever they said, we said, we said it, you know, and that's perfect. And Ray was the leader of that team, certainly the leader of the defense, and his attitude post the January of 2000 Super Bowl, his attitude was, I can't change people's mind. I'm not going to convince Steelers fans or Titans fans to love me. But if you win the crowd on the field, then you win the respect. And that's what he focused on. That's the birth of his pregame gladiator mentality. That's the birth of that team's attitude of, we're going to go out there and prove ourselves as gladiators and let the crowd cheer for who they cheer for. They were seen as bullies. I mean, that's why the film is named Bullies of Baltimore. People didn't like them. I mean, they did a lot of talking for a team that the previous year was 8-8, and here they are. Yeah, great defense, fine. But boy, they didn't mind telling people that they were there and ready to rumble. Without that attitude, without that Ray Lewis gladiator attitude that he had to have, I'm not sure it would have spread throughout the rest of the team and created that shell around them of, all right, everyone hates us. That's fine. We're going to go out and play.
I don't know if you guys had had a ton of interaction with Ray before doing this. What were your thoughts on him before this project, and what are your thoughts on him now after having worked with him on it?
I mean, Ray has always been a great friend of NFL Films and you know, obviously a legend on the field. And he's often very serious. The man knows how to lead, how to motivate. What I realized watching him on stage is how friendly he is, how much friendship he has with those guys. My favorite part of Ray Lewis in this film is just him laughing. It's just him sitting next to Goose and laughing at Goose. And you realize, oh, there's this other side, the non-gladiator Ray, who has this loving personality. Talks about it, you know, at the end of the show about how they need to stay together more often and get together and not wait 20 years to get together and all of this stuff. And you realize, wow, between them, there's a lot of love. It's not all guts and glory out on the football field. There's genuine love between all of them. And I'm not sure that's something that surprised me, but it was great to see and be reminded of that aspect of his personality.
Yeah, I think during the event, Ray was laughing and having as much more fun than I would have expected, because he has this serious persona. I mean, you see him in the huddles before games and just how intense he is on the football field. To see him just laughing was awesome. And I think putting him next to Goose, it really brought out the fun side of him in that. And, you know, I obviously, in researching this documentary, I learned a lot about Ray. Also did another documentary that I got to plug. You got to watch the Ray Lewis Icons, which is on now MGM Plus. And so I got to know him and really what, you know, his work ethic and everything he went through to become the player that he was. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, we're glad to hear it. He's super polarizing. We love him, obviously, but he is a lightning rod for a good reason. How did you guys go into approaching what happened off the field in Atlanta? You know, that in, you know, you mentioned January of 2000, because I have to imagine that was pretty difficult, but it's essential to this story. So what was kind of the thought process there?
Yeah, I think you could do a whole documentary on that. There's been plenty of pieces about that. What we were interested in is how it affected the team. You know, this wasn't just a Ray Lewis documentary. This was, how did it affect the team? How did they rally around it? And you see that great footage of him talking to the team in training camp after that incident and talking to the media. And it really does come down to, I think Gladiator got him through it. You know, that was where it kept coming back to, is this is the attitude that he had to have. You know, to approach the issue isn't really a problem. That's part of the story. It might even be part of the galvanization of this team, but the result is more interesting to the 2000 team, to what that meant and how they used it to win the Super Bowl.
And definitely what was interesting to me, and you mentioned it a little bit earlier, kind of the standouts, some of the takeaways from the overall documentary are that really, and Ray was absolutely the leader. He was the most talented player. He was in his prime. He was the kind of youngest leader and still in that prime at that time. But having Siragusa and having Rod Woodson and having Shannon Sharpe, and you get to the point where there's the media frenzy ahead of the Super Bowl and Shannon Sharpe literally having his back, them literally approaching him and, you know, putting him into an umbrella, was so eye-opening. And I was pretty young at the time of that team. I remember everything. I remember being upset about things, all that good stuff. But at the same time, it felt like without that insane level of veteran leadership, guys that came from other teams and around the league and had walked the walk and talked the talk already, like that shaped Ray so much moving forward, where he was sort of a little bit more of the sole leader moving forward. Not even to get into guys like Jonathan Ogden on the offensive side of the ball and some of those other guys that were clearly leaders on the field, off the field, all that good stuff. But just very interesting. And again, Billick and Siragusa for me really just, you know, I don't even want to say stole the show. To me, they kind of were the show. And with Tony Siragusa's, you know, untimely passing, as you guys are probably start getting into post-production, starting to be able to cut this up, all right, how are we going to start narrowing things down? How did that affect and impact everything? And was that kind of a eureka moment for you of where this was going to take shape?
Boy, that was a tough moment. I mean, I think for football fans in general, that was a tough moment. Goose is the type of guy that you think is going to live forever because there's just so much life in him. So when he passed, you know, after our shock and sadness over the loss, you start thinking about the film and you say, well, how's that affect the film? How do we deal with this? So we watched it. We rewatched the event that happened on stage, expecting, oh, this is now going to be sad and maudlin that Goose passed away. And though there were some tears, the laughs were even harder than they were before. It made you appreciate him even more. And you realized he got to do this a month before he passed away. And it gives a bittersweetness to the film of, it's almost an elegy to him, this entire film of, you want to know what Goose was like? All you have to do is watch this. I mean, in many ways, this is the Goose show because he's the one whose story moves so greatly through the film, you know, having passed just a month after it. And so you watch it and you sort of feel sad. I can't believe this guy, of all guys, this guy is gone. But at the same time, you're just like, wow, I'm so glad I get to see this. I'm so glad he got to experience this. I'm so glad they got together again. It sheds a whole new light on it. So when we watched it, we sort of said, well, let's not change much. Let's just show what it was like, because that's the best way to pay tribute to Goose, is just put him out there and show what type of guy he was.
And he, I mean, he does a great job of that, but I will say that to me, watching him during the event backstage, again, on stage, I don't know if anybody was more appreciative of being able to get back together that night and to be around those guys and to thank the ownership and the organization and the other guys that, you know, were all the rest of the players on that team than Goose. He seemed really, you know, in great form, like, you know, cracking up people at, like, nonstop, making tons of jokes, but also just very reflective and appreciative of everything that team did for him as a person.
Yeah, and it's not so much a question as to just sort of blow smoke at you guys a little bit, but it's well deserved, because when I watched it, it had my hardened Irish Catholic heart kind of opening up a little bit, because I thought it was just beautifully done. And I think you said it perfectly, that it really is the elegy to him, and it's exactly what he would have wanted. It's a celebration of his life, right? It's not like a sad look back at things. It's sort of a party, a celebration. I think he talks about that at certain points. Like, yeah, I think you guys pulled clips from Stern or whatever it was, and he's talking about, you know, go not where the path is, blaze a path of your own. I thought that was just all beautifully done, so I just wanted to pay you that compliment.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we unearthed some old interview bites of him with Steve Sable, our former president, talking about what he wanted his funeral to be like, and that sort of seemed very prescient. Again, bittersweet, but prescient, and really adds a lot of emotion to the end of the show.
Another interesting aspect, and really, I guess, kind of represented the offensive tail of this story. There were, you know, some moments of Jamal Lewis and whatnot, but Trent Dilfer's time with the team. And as Jake wrote the question much more eloquently, he said he had an interesting star-crossed relationship with the franchise. There you go, Jake. And how do you think he kind of really feels after all of this went down? And do you get the feeling that he did really start to get over it and maybe get over it? I mean, he was distant from the organization for years afterwards, and it was really unprecedented to go win a Super Bowl and then be told, you know, you're our third option. So what was your kind of feeling around that entire situation, which in that same sense that you said it was kind of a little bit of a forgotten and vintage and those things, the story of Trent Dilfer is a subplot here that is just so intriguing on many levels, and I don't think we would see in today's NFL.
Yeah, to your point on how he felt, I mean, he said it on stage. He, for a while, I mean, he was definitely not happy with how things ended in Baltimore. But I think with time and understanding his role and talking, he said he spent a lot of time talking to Ray Lewis and some of these guys after, and I think kind of became more appreciative of, you know, the situation and he got his role. That's for sure. He understood what he needed to do at the time. And in the end, he understood that it was a business decision, that, you know, unfortunately led to him leaving, but, that's kind of how football goes.
And the NFL, the way it works is, results talk. Had they gone on and won another Super Bowl, people would be like, what a brilliant move, you know, if it had worked out, you know, obviously, this team was a defensive-led team, and in many ways, it set the tone for what the Ravens franchise is still today of, look, we're going to be hard-nosed on defense, you know, lead the league in defense in categories, and our offense is going to be good enough to keep going and keep us, you know, keep us above the other team on the scoreboard. I think they were probably middle of the pack this year, obviously injuries and everything, but that's sort of mentality that was created with Trent Dilfer continues to this day. It's become the identity of the Baltimore Ravens, of a dominant defense that plays with a certain attitude, and the best they can do on offense, they're going to do. They're not going to cheap out on offense, but they know that the defense is the key and the dominant force, and the mentality comes from the defense.
Yeah, and they've earned a reputation as a great organization pretty much since this documentary started, or, you know, when it was set. And I was just really fascinated by the handling of all of that. I knew the certain particulars of it, but I didn't know, for example, that he was literally on his way to the ESPYs when the news got broken to him. And the fact that you guys put that in there, I thought was kind of a masterstroke, because as much as Ravens fans might think one way or the other about Trent Dilfer, and like, if, you know, they think his negative opinions are unfounded, I thought that was one thing where I'm kind of like, maybe they could have handled that a little bit better.
Yeah, that's it was a very interesting way to find out that you are no longer needed with the team that you just won a Super Bowl with, no doubt. And I think that is just one of the many cool things about this documentary, is the amount of archival material that, you know, Eric Powers, our producer on this, just, you know, was able to unearth with our research department, and just going through and finding things like that. And, you know, I think seeing those kind of moments, also a lot of moments on the field and sound moments on the field, are just, there was so much documentation of that team. It was kind of hard to get it down to, I mean, it's a bit longer on the side of the documentary, but it's hard to get it down to that length.
You have all of Hard Knocks as well, when they were just being performative through the roof beyond comprehension for an NFL team to the 10th degree as well. So, truly, I imagine there was a tough time trimming it down through all of those. I mean, some of the stuff you guys had in there, Brian Billick calling Scott Mitchell fat, all those kinds of things. And
just individually, I got to call out the facial contortions that Billick is able to make, both in this one and the other documentaries. Just like the stuff that he's doing with his face, I just, like, it always cracks me up.
Yes, and the biggest moment for us, and I won't give it all away, but the biggest moment for us was a moment that we – weren't supposed to capture. And that's after the Tennessee Titans divisional playoff game in the locker room. He yells at all the cameras in the room to turn off the cameras. And he doesn't say it quite PG. He tells all the cameras to turn off, which we did. We turned our cameras off. But our audio kept running. And so we had captured what he said in that moment. And that's really, I think, one of the high points of the film is everyone hearing for the first time what he said when he told the cameras to turn off. And it was quite explicit about the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, and I don't know how dialed into Ravens Twitter you guys are, but there were people that were there that night, and it has since gotten out. So I think
I did see that. Yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of the risk you run when you have a live event, and we showed that during the live event. But there's a large audience that has not seen that, and we highly recommend you watch the film to see that moment.
Yeah, and I guess with that, I got a couple more for you here. I can sort of lump them into one, and it goes with this theme. Were there any sort of interesting anecdotes that you uncovered while filming and interviewing people? And what were some stuff that maybe didn't make the cut that you guys are comfortable sharing that you really enjoyed?
You know what? I think the last thing to not make the film is fascinating to me. And they talk about it a little bit, about how every Friday, the main players, the leaders of the team, would sit in the steam room together. And they would ask Shannon and ask Dilfer, ask the offense, so, you know, how many points do you think you can get? And the offense would say, well, how many do you need? And the defense would discuss amongst themselves, well, let's see, this team, they can't run the ball on us. They might be able to pass on screens a little bit. Tell you what, if you can get us 6 points, we'll win. And the defense, by the back half of the season, was telling the offense, look, just get us 10. We need 10 this week, not 6. We need 10, or we need 6. But if you can get that, we're going to win. And that seems unfathomable to me. I mean, the 20 games they played in that season, 16 regular season games, 4 postseason games, only 5 teams scored more than 10 points. So 15 teams didn't even go into double digits, and that's because the defense just decided through sheer will, if you get 10, if you get 13, we're going to win. That's amazing to me.
It's like kids at the lunch table, like bartering about lunch, but it's, you know, grown men fighting for their will, which was so interesting. And the gladiator aspect is something that took away from me and what you said earlier, Ken, about how the NFL is different and what it was back then and the way that people could be on the field, off the field, things of that nature. So that's kind of my big takeaway, is remembering that time, remembering kind of the final hurrah. I guess I don't want to say the fall of Rome, but to make it kind of gladiator-esque in that same sense. In your takeaways that you guys want viewers to have, want the audience to have and remember from this team, this story, and your project that you obviously put hundreds, thousands of man hours and effort and, you know, your heart and soul into, what do you want the audience to walk away with or remember about this, if there's one message?
Ken, go ahead. You start.
I mean, I think when I think of this team and what I take away from it, it's the fact that they could not exist today. They could not exist on the field because you can't play that way anymore. It's just, it's been legislated out, as Coach Billick says, probably a nice way to say that football has changed. And that's a topic of debate that you can have forever. You can't hit the quarterback the way they did. You can't tackle the way they did. You can't exist as a defense the way they did. But more importantly, you couldn't be this team in the Twitter era. I mean, they would be talked about every single night on SportsCenter, because there was so much talk coming out of there, and it was great talk. It was entertaining. I mean, this wasn't just some soundbite where you're like, oh, I think they might have been insulting there. I mean, that's all there is now, right? You go, look at everything that happened with Burrow head.
Eli Apple.
Oh,
wow. Right now.
Oh, Eli, everybody. Oh, and that is just very tame stuff compared to what this team put out there. This team every day would be the number one talking point across ESPN and every podcast out there, because they, and I'm not sure that that would work. It might be too distracting today. It might be too much of a circus, but back then it's just the way they were, and it worked out great.
Yeah, they were one of a kind and the last of the their kind. Yeah, Ken said it great. I mean, there's been great defenses since, but I don't know if you're going to have that combination of ability, arrogance, personality that you saw on that team. And I hope that that's what people will come away with, is that they were a unique football team and the last of the kind.
Yeah, and I guess as two guys that have covered this team for 4 years and are going to for the next couple years, at the very least, we think, it would be really nice if we could get a team like this. But like you said, it's not going to happen. So I think this is a great representation, a great time capsule of when it could happen, and a great great piece on one of the best teams that has ever touched the football field. So we thank you guys for your efforts in it. It was really fun to watch. We thank you for the advanced screener and your time here. And before we get you out of here, how about you go ahead and plug the documentary, let people know when and where they can watch it.
Any other work you guys got coming up as well?
Absolutely.
Sure. Listen, all you have to do is look at NFL Films social channels. You'll see that we are producing out our butt. Everything that we do is, on there. This film airs Sunday the 5th after the Pro Bowl games, later that night at 8 o'clock on ESPN. 8:30, right? And if you want the more uncensored version, it's available on ESPN Plus. I recommend that version. But if you have kids and you want to make sure that they enjoy the show, the ESPN broadcast version is probably more appropriate. Obviously these guys don't have a problem speaking in adult terms, and the ESPN Plus version will be available for the long term on that platform.
Yeah, that is one thing that maybe I was a little bit, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but it was there was a lot of profanity tossed around that night on stage. But they were really respective and would tell the kids, hey, time to exit the hall, because I got a, especially one story in particular that you're going to hear that Goose tells.
Tony Siragusa Soprano himself, just controlling the room.
He's perfect. But yeah, so the amount of profanity is it's interesting. And I will say also that as a companion to the full film, to the documentary, ESPN Plus will be airing a cut down version of the event. So the event was 2.5 hours live, and we cut it down to about an hour. And that will also be on ESPN Plus to go along with it. So some of the stories will go into more detail in that version.
Awesome. Well, it's Ken Rogers. It's Jason Weber. Thank you guys very much for your time. Excited to talk to you again in 10 years for the 2012 Ravens documentary. And thanks again for your time, guys. This was really fun.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
So much, gentlemen. It was a blast.
Cool.
All right. Thanks.
Where is the wise man? Where is the scholar? Where is the philosopher of this age?